You know, I would have loved to have met Samuel Adams or people like this, certain people of this. I don't know if it's makeup. I don't know if it's their parents. I don't know what it is. But certain people seem to be put in certain positions at certain times to do amazing things. And at the time, you may take them for granted. You may not realize the extent of their contribution and how they're moving forward society. They're moving for the greater good. You talk about the greater good. The greater good of a people, of a country, what have you. Our next guest, and I don't throw these words around lightly, in so many ways, he's a hero. His name is Pete Hendrickson. He's written the book, Cracking the Code. It's famous all across the country about the IRS, what specifically the IRS code is. He's cracked that code and let you know what it is. His website's losthorizons.com. You can check out all the information. He breaks down what your obligation with is under this code and how a hood has been put over our head, for lack of a better word, and a disguise that has really hurt us all very badly. And he is out there on his own in so many ways. There are other people, but nobody quite like Pete. We're so glad to have Pete back on the Power Hour. Pete Hendrickson, welcome to the Power Hour.
Well, thank you very much, Daniel. It's my great pleasure to be back with you.
Okay, when people hear the IRS, 90-something percent of people probably get either a knot in their stomach or they are ready to punch a hole in the wall. I mean, they don't have a positive feeling about the IRS. Give us some basics. What do we not know? What is the IRS tax and what do we not know about it that is hurting us?
Yeah, basics important. Let me start with this, though. People do have those reactions that you describe. And the reason they have them is because they're encouraged to. There's a very very established, very broad and deep program to encourage and instill fear of the IRS. And the reason for that is because people don't look closely at things that frighten them. What they do is they Ooh. Move past those things as quickly as they can. If you're walking past a dark alley and in a quiet night in the middle of a bad part of town, you don't look down that alley and study it with great care just to see what's going on. You hustle past. That's what you do. You hustle past. And the IRS likes it that way. They don't want people to look at their stuff. And the reason they don't is because people who do look discover that it is not what the IRS would like them to think that it is. Income tax is an excise tax. It's an excise tax that's been in place.
Define excise. I've heard that a lot.
I'll do that. An excise is a piece of the action. Literally means a piece of the action tax. It's a tax in which somebody who has contributed in part to the production of something is entitled to a claim to some of the benefits that accrue because of that. And so it's a privilege tax. It is literally a privilege tax. Courts, for what it's worth, if you want to rely on courts' rulings, and frankly, I don't necessarily encourage that because courts are the creatures of the people who appoint the judges who preside over them. But the courts are very, very clear about this. Supreme Court is very clear about this. Excises are privilege taxes, literally a privilege tax. In fact, court rulings have said that the two terms are synonymous. If you call it an excise tax or you can call it a privilege tax, they are synonymous terms.
Okay, let me pause right there. Let me pause right there. And I'm going to ask a lot of questions like this, so please forgive
me
in advance.
Not a problem. Please do.
Okay, so excise tax, privilege tax. You're saying that the government has the privilege to tax a piece of the action, meaning the circulator.
No.
Okay, explain.
No. The government is able to tax your use of a privilege that they provide to you. You have to exercise a privilege that the taxing authority extends to you and have a gain from it. In the case of the income tax, that's a specific element, is there has to be a gain. And then if you have done that, because you're using their privilege to gain something, they get to take a portion of the proceeds as well. It's as though if you were to borrow the federal government's lawnmower and go out and cut lawns with it and charge for the cutting the grass, they have every right to say, well, that's fine, but we want 10% of the proceeds of what you're doing because you're using our lawnmower. So they're extending the privilege of using their lawnmower. They're claiming a piece of the action.
Okay, so what is the privilege they're extending?
That's an excise.
Okay, so what is the privilege they extend?
Well,
or they claim to extend?
There are a bunch of them. It can mean exercising authorities that are granted to them constitutionally. It can mean doing something with resources on their property, and the feds have a lot of property in this country. It can mean a number of different things. It's a limited list. the things that I just said, you know, comprise the large portions of the total. There are, you know, a lot of smaller ones. I mean, getting welfare from the federal government is a privilege. Unfortunately, for the perspective of a lot of people who are confused about this subject, that includes getting Social Security, which is really just welfare. There isn't any trust fund. There's no, you know, you don't have an account. It's not insurance. It's just a tax. It's a big, huge tax. And the carrot that was dangled in order to get people to buy into that thing in the 1930s was the idea that if you paid that tax, you would technically qualify for a particular kind of welfare benefit later on in life. And that's how it has stayed ever since. You can know that really easily by the fact that, you know, according to the rules, everyone is vested in the benefit after 10 years of paying the tax, 40 quarters. But you still have to pay the tax. they still try and get you to pay the tax in the meantime.
We're under the impression, you know, Social Security, or it's being sold, we have the idea. Well, I pay the, it's almost like a 401k. I'm going to pay my Social Security, it's like a 401k,
right.
So then the money will be there at the end. But no, it's a benefit.
Right. No, that's not it at all. It's pure welfare. In fact, Donald Trump is talking right now, just last week, made an intimation that he's considering changing, you know, lowering the benefit structure. So whatever you believed that or were encouraged to believe, you know, you were entitled to, and they love to use that word entitlement. There's no entitlement legally. It's a political entitlement in that the government has made this declaration and it's, you know, become sort of a third rail, so it's hard to back away from because so many people have, you know, an interest in getting that benefit. But there's no legal connection there at all, and that's just a fact. So Social Security, you know, benefits are also a privilege and subject to the tax. And in fact,
okay, so continue on. Okay, so continue
so,
on.
So,
with
okay,
this.
So the tax is an excise. In 1862, the Lincoln administration put it in place. It has remained unchanged ever since. I mean, there have been a lot of additions and modifications and surtaxes added, like the Social Security tax, you know, added in 1935, and Medicare and so forth. A lot of things like that. Every 2 years or so since 1862, in fact, for most of that period of time, there's been some sort of additional fussing with the tax, usually an addition of some kind. So it's grown to be an enormous body of law, you know, 7 million words or so. And yet the basic nature of the tax has never changed. 16th Amendment did not initiate the tax. It didn't make any fundamental changes in the tax. All it did was overrule a defective Supreme Court ruling in Pollock versus Farmers Loan and Trust in 1895 that shielded dividend and rent income, which is to say dividend and rent gains that were connected with the exercise of a federal privilege, from being taxable directly. The Supreme Court in that case said that those taxes, because they derive from private property, the stock dividends and the stock portfolio and the real estate from which the rent was connected, he said because of those connections, the tax in those cases was actually a property tax, and therefore it was a direct tax and required apportionment. 16th Amendment just overruled that Supreme Court ruling and said, no, you can't resort to this source argument to shield these particular gains from the income tax. So that's all it did. Didn't initiate anything. This is very clear in the law. It's one of the things that the people flogging misunderstanding about the tax most like to conceal, because it sort of tells the whole story. When you understand that the tax dates back to 1862 and know the history of it at that point, during that period of time, you suddenly, it becomes kind of impossible to misunderstand its real nature. But
all right,
that part is hidden, and because there are people who benefit hugely from the federal government now collecting, you know, around $2.5 trillion under the income tax, which if applied the way the law is actually written, would probably yield something more along the order of $800 billion or so, maybe even a little less than that. So there's a huge amount of money at stake, and the impetus to conceal the truth about the tax is enormous. But in 2003, I published my first book, Cracking the Code, The Fascinating Truth About Taxation in America, revealing the reality of the tax and became the first American in history to get a complete refund of everything withheld from me in connection with the income tax, including Social Security and Medicare. Since that time, tens of thousands of other people have done it, totaling billions of dollars just from the feds alone, and that's matched by refunds and retentions under the state governments, about 36 state governments, all the ones that collect an income tax, also parallel these admissions, acknowledgments, what I like to call victories in enforcing the rule of law, because this is what the law says. It just requires people to know what it is and to stand up for it.
And, all right, let me couple questions, important questions. I may go backward, forward, whatever. But okay, you talked about 1862, Lincoln. Obviously, that's the middle of the Civil War or towards the beginning of it. This idea of a privilege, that it's excise tax on a privilege. At that point, if the government is saying you're using the privileges we're giving you, at that point, did not our whole foundation of our country flip on its head and we went from we the people to federal subjects? And so we're federal subjects and they're...
No, because there were lots of people that actually do have gains from federal privilege, and those are the only people that the tax touched. Throughout the course of the time that, you know, from 1862 until the tax was went dormant in 1872 until 1894, the total people doing any filing was about 7% of the population. It was the percentage that was actually, you know, getting paid by the feds and using federal stuff, which, you know, during times of war is always a much higher percentage than otherwise. In fact, between 1862 and 1943, when the notion of promoting a deep and broad misunderstanding of the tax took hold, and I'll get into that, or maybe we'll get into that, what happened at that point in 43. But up until that time, in all those years in which the tax was collected, the average total of people in America filing income taxes was never more than 9% of the population. You know, people understood. I mean, there was no misunderstanding about this, and it didn't turn anything on its head. Privilege taxes are a standard and ancient reality.
One of the things that was totally, you know, made the light bulb come on, you know, I basically understand the points of this. The real minutiae of it, I don't. But basically, I understand. I've read part of your books. I'm a big fan of your read articles on your website. In 1936, from the government's own statistics, there was something like less than 4% of America even filed.
3.9%. Yeah, that's just a reality. The number of people actually receiving privileges or exercising privileges and making reportable gains from that exercise privileges is always a relatively small portion of the population, and in some periods of time, it's a very small portion of the population. Remains a small portion.
That's what you call a paradigm breaking statistic. And paradigm breaking statistics are very powerful. The 16th Amendment was so broad, if it created something so overwhelming to the American people and encompassing of the American people, then why in 1936 did only 3.9% file? That's the great question, isn't it?
It is a great question. Here's the follow up question: why by 1945 were 93% of Americans filing income tax returns, and 93% of Americans.
Even better question. Even better question. Before we go, I got to go back and ask you another question before we go forward.
Sure.
This is, I know, ladies and gentlemen, hopefully I can, I'm trying to keep this straight with as much information so you can have background. It's obviously a very complicated situation. It's a ruse. Like you said, there's, 11,000 pages of it or whatever it is of the code. No one person can know this. It's ridiculous.
Well,
anyway, the question about apportionment. Explain apportionment, direct apportionment,
sure,
to me, because that's what the and where it is in the Constitution.
Yeah, it's two places in the Constitution specify that direct taxes, capitations, and other direct taxes can only be applied using the rule of apportionment. The only thing in there twice, as a matter of fact, the founders took taxation really, really, really seriously. Y'all learned that you know, in civics class, you know, whatever civics class remains these days. And
we don't have civics anymore, Pete. You got to help us out.
Not ain't much, but back in the day when there was, you know, at least lip service paid to the concept, everybody learned about taxes and the founding generation and what their attitude was. You all remember the Tea Party, a Boston Tea Party at least. But they did take it really seriously, so they put this in there twice. And direct taxes, capitations and other direct taxes can only be applied through the rule of apportionment. Apportionment means that the total amount that is being sought by a tax, and it would be a tax on a thing. As an example, Congress could tax windows. And so it would add up all the windows in the country, and you know, $10 tax per window. It would add up all up, all the windows in the country. It would multiply that by $10, and that's the total tax. Now, that tax doesn't get applied to each person based on the number of windows they have. It gets divided up among the states by percentage, with the ratio being whatever their percentage of the national population is. So if Maryland had 10% of the population of the country, and the total tax was $1 million, Maryland would owe $100,000. It has 10%, it owes 10% of the tax, period. That's just, that's all.
And then the 100, and then the 100,000 would be spread out between everybody who lived in Maryland? Is that?
It would be up to Maryland and the people of Maryland to figure out where and how Maryland would get the money.
Does it have to be, so it didn't necessarily?
Maryland has its own constitution, so it would have its own structure dictating how it collects money from people in the state. You know, maybe it would just do it through a tariff. Maybe it would.
You know, this is very important right here.
Property tax, whatever.
Okay, so this is very important right here. That I think for our audience to get. So you, I'm going to summarize. You correct me where I'm wrong. So it has to be an apportioned tax. So if it's a direct tax, like what we perceive the income tax to be, we perceive it to be a direct tax, whether it is or not.
We are encouraged to believe that that's what the 16th Amendment did.
Right. We're going to tax, the government is going to directly tax your income, your labor, or whatever.
Income,
okay.
With a common definition, like everything that comes in, period. Yes.
Right. Okay, let's assume that that's true. If that was the case, it has to be apportioned, meaning that the government is seeking, we're going to seek $1 trillion, and we're going to divide it among all the states, and the state's got to give us $1 trillion out of 50 states based on the population.
That's how it would have to work. That's right. If the income tax really were the direct tax that people are encouraged to imagine, in other words, if it were a tax just on all that comes in, which, by the way, is the definition of a capitation. Capitation is one of the most broadly misunderstood or non-understood words in the Constitution. It's a legal term, and it never gets talked about. And if you spend any time dipping into the legal world, you will find that that is the one constitutional term that simply never makes an appearance. And there's a reason for that, because at least I speculate that there's a reason. And that is because it kind of is the cognitive linchpin to the whole income tax scheme, and that scheme is very important to a lot of very important people, very powerful people. I mean, it's also very important to people who are not so powerful, people like you and me, because misunderstanding it is the thing that keeps us in bondage to this.
Pete, you are incredibly powerful. Pete, hold on. Come on, Pete. You are incredibly powerful. We have dominion of God in us. We are incredibly powerful.
Well,
we're endowed by our Creator.
I agree with every word and sentiment there, but you know what I mean too. People who have a lot of ability to control the dialogue, to see what gets into the mainstream media and what doesn't, and so on. They want this misunderstanding of the tax to go on and on and on, because it feathers their nests. It pays for their kids' private schools. It does, you know, it's their ticket to do what they want, and so they very much have an interest in maintaining it.
All right, we only got a couple minutes before the break.
Sure.
But let me continue with this summary, maybe a couple things to think about. We're seeing situations in America where, like, the city of Dallas will stop churches from feeding the homeless. This doesn't seem to relate, but I'll show you how it does, or at least in my mind.
Yeah, sure.
So the city of Dallas comes out and they say, okay, this church cannot feed the homeless anymore. So the church has a certain interest. They have a certain religious obligation, a Christian obligation they feel. But just as people, it doesn't have to be a church. The people feel like they have a moral responsibility and an option to then feed other people. Okay, that's their interest. That's their private, personal interest. At the same time, the city of Dallas, the corporation of the city of Dallas, they have an interest too. And because these taxes have gone so out of hand and so crazy and so much money's been pumped in, the city of Dallas has an interest that the streets aren't filled with homeless or that churches aren't able to for free then feed homeless so that the city of Dallas then can't make money off the homeless or use the homeless or what have you. So the interest of the city of Dallas is now competing with the interest of the people. And yes, the power that the city of Dallas and the fuel that they get to drive that interest are these unapplied, misapplied, unconstitutional appropriations of these taxes.
You're absolutely correct with this one caveat. Dallas, of course, is not the federal government. It's not subject to the federal government's rules, the United States constitutional rules. It's subject to state of Texas constitutional rules. But your analogy of how Washington's interest and the beneficiaries,
yes, that's a better
one. That includes the states as well, because of course the states are given these huge federal grants. So what happens is Washington collects all this massive amount of money, and then it doles out bits of it to the states to buy their cooperation with the whole process. And basically
bribery. You know, they're bribing
it
them into
puts
compliance.
Them on the teat, and so they want the
teat.
They want
did
the
you
trust.
Say the teat?
I said
puts
the teat.
Them on the teat.
Puts them on the teat, and they want that milk to keep flowing.
And tax money is good milk too.
Oh yeah, they want the whole thing to stay just like it is, and you're just exactly correct in the fundamental point you made. It is that wealth that is flowing into the hands of this political class, this private interest, this competing interest, this interest which is in competition with you. Either you get to keep your money that you created, or they get to get it and spend it on what they want to spend it on. These are competing interests.
Wow.
And
Pete Hendrickson, LostHorizons.com is the website, LostHorizons.com. Cracking the Code is the seminal book. If you do not have this in your library, you need it. If you don't have a library, start it with this book, Cracking the Code, Pete Hendrickson. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Power Hour. So good to be with you. Feel good broadcast.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Break the bond to Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with olive oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that olive oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
With dozens of food and storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Humana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Humana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made. Good for you. Food stores I love to eat. Yum!
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
North American Urban Spice, a Cassinger, we got him off that mountain finally. chasing the goats off to pick the wild oregano. There is a difference. Ladies and gentlemen, we say it all the time, but really, you are risking your money and probably got a good chance of wasting your money if you don't buy these type products from a place like the Power Mall. And where else can you find all these products like this in one place? They're fantastic. They change your life. They help your life. They bless your life. They don't help Merck. They don't help GlaxoSmithKline, but they help freedom. They help the truth. And people like Pete Hendrickson, we're allowed to have them on. So the Power Mall, 877-817-9829, 877-817-9829. There's something, the great source of vitamins. You cannot go to big box, anyone I've seen, expect to get high quality vitamins, high quality minerals. Your body will change if you get good nutrition. If you get chemically filled minerals or chemically filled vitamins, that's going to your body actually has to work harder to deal with those. There's a big difference. You get what you pay for in this. Our prices are not unreasonable. We make them as good as we can so that we can keep what we're doing here. It's not cheap to pump Pete all over the world. And that's what we're doing. And it's an important message. You have always been there for us. We thank you for your support. We thank you for your purchases. We thank you for your donations. It means something. Consider a donation even if you're going to not purchase. We do have 10% off if you've never purchased or haven't purchased in a while. We got sales on Strauss Heart Drops, all North American Urban Spice. We got some other things in stock now. Check out the Power Mall, thepowermall.com, thepowermall.com, 877-817-9829. You can call directly. Getting back to Pete. Pete Hendrickson is the author of a seminal book. You can get it on his website, losthorizons.com. Pete, I didn't even check. I should have asked you out during the break. Is there a phone number people can buy your book from?
Well, there's a website and a web page, specific web page, losthorizons.com/cc.htm.
You know, we don't, we don't carry books anymore because it just, you know, for a lot of reasons. But,
sure.
You know, I've been wanting to consider three or four different books that we should carry, and this would be one of them. I may talk to you about us carrying them directly. Have you got some kind of wholesale? All right. Because this is so important when people, you know, you always hear people say, well, the income tax is illegal. No, it's not illegal. It's just wrong. It's applied wrong, and it doesn't apply to you. That's what you need. You need to understand these things. We're going to get down to the nitty gritty in some of this. Let me summarize again, because this is very complicated for people just joining us. P. Hendrickson, the author of Cracking the Code, has literally cracked the code. Okay. The income tax, as we are told, we think of it as a direct tax. We're taxing, you know, Bill Jones goes to work, and all the money that comes in, that is defined as income in their mind. Well, I've made income, and now I got to take that money, and I got to give a portion of it to the IRS for my tax. I just have to pay it. It's my burden. Okay, there's some problems with this. One, no direct tax can be unapportioned, meaning all direct taxes, if you think it is a direct tax, it has to be apportioned, meaning it has to be divided among the states, all 50 states. You have to have a specific number in mind that we want to raise $1 trillion, what have you, and we're going to apportion it through the states based on population, and the state figures out how to get that tax. That is a direct tax. That is apportionment. So obviously they're not doing that. And so, obviously, it's not a direct tax. So then what is it? It's an excise tax. It's a privilege tax. So the question then becomes, who is using the privilege? Who is it's a certain list. I imagine, Pete, it's a very limited list, because at one point in America, whether America realizes it or not, only 3.9% of Americans were filing income tax filings with the IRS in this country in the 30s. About less than 4%. So who is responsible for this quote-unquote privilege tax?
Yeah, it is a limited list. I have a page on my website called What Is
Tax. Give us a couple.
Privilege?
Yeah, give us a few of them. You don't have to list all of them.
And on that page, the subject is broken down and presented. And the whole thing, you know, only takes about three paragraphs to present. It's not a huge subject. It does encompass what probably amounts to maybe as many as 20% of the population of the American population actually does enough privileged things to end up owing a tax. Maybe 20% at this point in time. And the reason for that is because the federal government has been pulling in so much wealth out of the United States government's been pulling in so much wealth out of the American public that it has spread itself. It's become the blob. It's Leviathan. It's got tentacles into so many different things in this country now that there are more and more people who actually connect with it and exercise privileges that it extends as part of their money.
Give us an example. Procedures. Give us an example.
People who receive Medicare benefits. Not the doctors that provide them. They're just getting paid. But the people who receive the benefits are all privileged beneficiaries.
Huh. What about federal employees? What about if you work for the United States government?
There's an entire category for that. That's the meaning of wages, which you'll see makes a big appearance in tax forms and so forth. Wages is the remuneration paid to the federal workforce. It isn't the remuneration paid to the guy that works at Joe's tire shop. That guy, they may call what that man gets paid wages, because wages is also a common English word, meaning pay for labor. But in tax law, it is a statutorily defined term with a different meaning. It's confined to the pay for labor of the federal workforce. And there's a specific statutory definition that says this. Trader business has its own special statutory definition in tax law. Employee has its own special statutory definition in tax law. Tax law is designed to whether or not it was designed in order to be confusing or simply because this was the way that the bureaucratic mindset that wrote the law operated, it took a package of commonly used terms that would normally be used to describe activities going on in the federal workforce, and it gave them their own special meanings. And so when people talk with these words, talk with these legal terms, it sounds as though they're referring to the same things that everybody does, and that lends itself to the confusion of imagining the tax to extend beyond the scope of what it actually touches. And that confusion is the thing that lies behind the tax ending up being applied to, you know, 90% of the population now instead of 3.9% of the population. It wouldn't be 3.9% today. Like I said, it might be closer to 20%.
Because the government's grown so much. Because
the government has
grown
so much that it now has a finger in every pie. I have a wonderful little, well, I call it wonderful. Other people can choose to describe it however they wish, but people do tend to like it. I have a little model of the way the tax works, and I'd like to recommend to everyone listening that they go read this little 8-page tale, which I call Bob's Bicycles, and it will explain to you everything that I've said so far today in a short little compact, easily understood format. And you'll know more about the income tax after reading that little 8-page story than
most accountants.
Than most of the professionals in the country.
Yeah.
No. And you can get to that by going to losthorizons.com/bobsbicycles.pdf. And that's got a capital B on Bob and a capital B on bicycles. No punctuation otherwise. And it's all
maybe Catherine, if you're listening, let's try to put this up on the website, or we can mail that to people.
That would be great.
Get the link.
So
we can make it easy for people. Let me ask you a couple questions then before we move forward. In Europe, last time I went to Europe, so I went to dinner. Say my dinner was £20 or whatever. Well, the bill was like $26. They just put a tax right on it. Mm-hmm. Everything you buy, doesn't matter if it's a bicycle, a pair of jeans, or whatever, it's like 24%.
Value-added
tax constitutional in the United States?
No, it wouldn't be, because it would amount to a capitation. It would be a tax on all economic activity with undistinguished economic activity. And that's the
distinction. This is so important.
A capitation is a tax on undistinguished economic activity.
This is so important, what you're saying, Pete.
It would have to be apportioned, and there's simply no way of accomplishing that.
There's an echo or something going on, or a delay or something. I don't know. There it goes. It's gone. Just so you know, ladies and gentlemen, you hear people say, well, let's simplify taxes. It's so complicated. Now let's simplify it. Let's just have a value-added tax. Okay, that would be a dream for the government, I think. Let's just tax everything.
Yeah.
right from the source. You don't have to fill out anything. This is illegal. This is against the Constitution. This is the brilliance part of it of our founding fathers. Okay, I just wanted to get that across.
While that subject is out there, I want to point something else out about apportionment really briefly, and people will understand this point a lot easily, I think, and it makes it communicates a lot. The apportionment rule is a naturally restraining rule, and the reason that it is, and this is because the founders wanted the federal government to be restrained in size. This was just kind of the whole point, was to have a limited, constitutionally limited state. Apportionment can only manage to apply an apportioned tax if the amount that it would apply to any given state is no more than that state can afford. Now, there are states that are, you know, relatively strapped for wealth, and there are others that are not. You can't apply an apportioned tax and have it end up with a bill that is greater than is manageable or acceptable to any given state. So there's a natural restraining mechanism. Plus, apportioned taxes, it's a one-time deal. People stand up and vote in Congress for them. So it's like, you know, straight up, you know who it is that laid that tax on you and whether or not you want to return them to Congress next time around. They know that you know, and we'll be deciding whether to return them to Congress next time around. Completely different from this income tax scheme in which Congress never votes on it at all. Once this thing went into place and it began being successfully misapplied, there was no accountability available any longer. It was an open spigot of dollars flowing into Washington endlessly from that point forward.
On the backs of the American people.
Your hard-earned gets taken from you, and it gets spent by, you know, some political hack in Washington who is as likely as not spending it on something that is adverse to your interests and that you would never in a million years pay for on your own because it's against your interests or it's unwise in general. It causes problems in your country. It causes problems your children are going to end up having to deal with. A whole lot of reasons that you might not want to spend that money. So
basically, the 16th Amendment put in this tax that was nothing new. It just kind of solidified it, I guess.
It prevented two different applications of the tax from being shielded from the tax. That's right. Stock gains and rent from federally connected activities.
So it started out as started out as 1% of your income. It wasn't applied to but hardly very few people. So America basically said, well, I don't care, whatever.
It
doesn't matter to me.
It was a very popular
tax. It's not a big deal.
Let me make this point. You took me to a very important point, Daniel. This tax is so popular because of the realities of its application that in 1913 the American people modified the Constitution in order to ensure its continuation. Think about that. In 1913, the American people amended the Constitution just to maintain this tax. It had been stalled. It had been hindered so thoroughly in 1895 by the Pollock Court decision that the American public, en masse, amended the Constitution to restore it to activity, to full activity. This is a popular tax. And the reason, would it be popular the way people believe it to be today, people believe the tax to be? What they think that it is? Would anyone do that now? They would not. But
wow.
When you
That's
know what the tax really is, so, you know, what it really is something very, very different from what people think that it is and are encouraged to think that it is today. People, you got to learn what this tax really is. It's a great tax. It's a constitutional tax. It's a beneficial tax. This is a tax by which people who make money from public resources are obliged to pay a little portion of their private profits back into the public purse. That's what the tax is all about. That's what the income tax is for. It is to cause the recovery of private profits made with public resources back to the public treasury. It's a good tax. It's a wonderful tax.
I'm fantastic. I'm all for the income tax. I'm all for it,
Pete. Absolutely. Absolutely.
This is fantastic, Pete. I'm all for the income tax.
Yeah, absolutely, and everyone ought to be. We want it applied the way the law is written. And frankly, when you learn what that law is, you can see to it that that's what happens in your own life, which is why those tens of thousands of people that I spoke of at the beginning of the show here have recovered those billions of dollars because they no longer pay a tax that they don't owe. And that can be true for you,
okay,
too.
All right. So the book, Cracking the Code, tells how to do this. You've helped, literally, like you said, thousands, tens of thousands of people have used this. You don't hear about it a lot, or if you do in the public, you hear about it in a disparaging way. We're very proud to have you on to be able to discuss this and so people can know the truth. Okay, the question that I'm sure is hanging from our audience's lips is, if what Pete's saying true, then why does the H&R Block at Walmart tell me that I got to do it different? Why does everybody say that I got to do it this other way? Pete knows better than them?
They don't actually say that. Here's one of the real...
Can you explain that?
Okay, here's one of the really devious elements of the scheme. If you go to that H&R Block guy at Walmart, he's going to require you to bring in what you are going to be representing to be records of your income. And I'm putting income in quote marks here. What I mean is he's going to have you tell him what you made that is taxable, what you received last year that is taxable. He's not going to decide it for you. He's not going to say, okay, bring me in all of your economic records and I will pick out the things that qualify for the tax. He's not going to do that. He's going to say, bring me in your income records. That's what he's going to say. He's not going to tell you the distinction that's in play there, but that's what he's going to say. And you are going to bring the stuff in and say, here are all my income records. And he's going to say, okay, I'll do your taxes here now based on what you just gave me. May not say it that way because that kind of gives a hint to the what's going on. But that's what.
Do they know this or are they ignorant too?
Nah, they have no clue. They have no clue. They're products of the same misinformation campaign. In fact, even more so because the IRS is the one that trains those people. No, they don't have a clue. You know, the way that this scheme went into effect in the early 1940s, during the tumult of World War II, and after 10 years or more of the Great Depression, and when radio chats had become this very powerfully influential thing in this country that had not existed before, and at the point at which the majority of American, the generation coming up at that time, had been educated in government schools, which, it is actually a factor, much as it may be hard for a lot of people to imagine. But at that time, when that transformation went from 3.9% of the population filing an income tax return to 93% doing it, the scheme, basically the implementation of the scheme, was to send out to everybody in the country, every business in the country, documents saying that the business owners are required to report the wages of their employees to the government. And those requests did not include definitions of wages and employees. They just took it for granted that, you know, under the American system, people are required to know the law. They're responsible themselves to have to do their due diligence, to look into the law and see, well, they're saying wages and employees. Do these things have special meanings? Who would even think that? No one would. But they do have special meanings. And in the case of these requests that were made, the forms that were sent out, they relied on those meanings, and they were produced in pursuant to those special meanings. They just didn't tell them that. They just didn't say that. And so everybody, every business, sent back documents filled out, sworn under penalty of perjury, no less, saying, I paid, you know, X amount of wages to my employee, Joe Smith. And this was, you know, the guy at the tire store down the street did this just as much as the Department of Transportation did. And so the IRS received this document back and said, oh, the owner of Joe's tire store says that that this guy was paid wages. So the owner of Joe's, and said it under penalty of perjury, no less. So the owner of Joe's tire store said that this worker is an employee, quote-unquote, as defined in the law, and was paid wages, quote-unquote, as defined in the law, and that means that he owes a tax. So we're gonna wait for his tax return, and if we don't get one, we're going to send him a scary letter that says, where's your tax
return? So this is a con game.
It's a con. It is absolutely a con.
This is a con. This is the biggest damn con in the history of
history. It's the biggest con in the history of the world. You bet.
I mean, put aside the theory of evolution. Besides the theory of evolution, this is the biggest con ever.
Yeah, and this is the one that represents the most wealth changing hands. Yeah, yeah. Even accounting for evolution.
Wow, we only got about 5 minutes left. Okay, so people are in situations, they, you know, obviously, what's the next question people are going to ask? So what should I do? What can I do? What am I going to learn from this book?
The thing to do is read Bob's Bicycles. You know, your idea of having Catherine put this up on the screen, great idea. I'll repeat that URL for those people who don't find their way to the website, your website, and find it, losthorizons.com, bobsbicycles.pdf, capital B, capital B. And otherwise, you know, no apostrophes or anything like that, just, you know, all one word. And the easy way to get to that, frankly, is go to losthorizons.com, and at the very top navigation mast, you'll see a link to the sitemap. Just click on the sitemap. It'll take you to all the resources, and Bob's Bicycles is one of those links that's right there, you know, for you to click on. This stuff is, you know, it's complicated because there's been this huge program to generate misunderstanding, to nurture misunderstanding in people's heads. But it really is not that complicated. Once you cross over a certain kind of, you know, cognitive hump of it, based on all the bad information that's been put into your head your entire life on this subject, it suddenly becomes very, very crystal clear and easy. And I encourage everyone to do that. You know, I say again, tens of thousands of your fellows, you know, men and women have done this, people from all walks of life, and you can too, and you should, because it is your birthright to live under the rule of law. It is the intention of this country's structure that we have a constitutionally limited government. It is the thing that ensures that government operates within the parameters laid down in the Declaration of Independence and in our Constitution. It's the thing that keeps those things from being out of harmony with each other. We don't want the law to be, you know, figuring out ways of getting around the principles and structures that were put in place in our foundation. We want it to harmonize with those things, and you need to be a part of that process. The founders rely very heavily on the American people to be the thing that keeps government in the proper groove. Government doesn't want to be in a groove. It wants to do anything that the political class that is, you know, currently in control of the levers of power want to do. And so our structure is set up to restrain those things in many different ways. And one of them is to diffuse authority as broadly as possible. It's one of the reasons why we have three different branches of government that compete with each other. It's one of the reasons why we have juries. It's one of the reasons why we have an income tax or a tax-limiting structure where, unless it's going to be politically accountable and restrained by virtue of the apportionment principle, it's going to be diffuse. It's going to be in your hands. It's going to be in your hands. An indirect tax, you get to decide whether you do the things that it falls on. And okay. In this case, you get to decide whether or not you're going to participate in the misunderstanding of that tax and its misapplication to you.
All right, we got about a minute and a half or so. Just quickly, does this have anything to do, you know, you talk about privileges, when you go and get a Social Security number provided by the government, so the privilege of using that Social Security number, Is that how they kind of lock you in, or no, it has nothing to do with it?
No, I mean, having a Social Security number, no more than, you know, having a fishing license means that every time you put a hook in water anywhere that you're doing something regulated by the state. You're not. You might have a pond in your own backyard. You can put a hook and go fishing in your own pond without a license from the state. The fact that you may have gotten a license from the state so you can fish in one of their ponds too, that doesn't change the legal reality of you fishing in your own pond.
Okay, another quick question. Okay, so you say what people have done. So people have taken this information, you've showed them how to do it in this book. They have done what? What have they done with this?
They have overcome as much as millions of dollars in individual cases, millions of dollars of alleged liability taken down to actually getting a refund. I have a series of videos that readers, some, you know,
okay.
relative.
And that's on Lost Horizons?
Yeah.
There's the music. Let me summarize for people, because I know you want to be careful the way you answer questions. I'll answer for you, maybe. What you're saying is basically people learn what the law is. They are able to cancel what the debts that the IRS says they have, or they've been able to actually
get their
refunds
back.
Get their money back.
You get complete refunds back. You can go back 3 years even.
Well, good. There you go. So I know maybe you want to answer a certain way or what have you. I get it.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that today.
CTC, cracking the code. It's a very, very important. If you do not have a book library, start it with this book. You talk about changing. You want to change the government? Then suck the venom right out of them. Suck the blood right out of them. Stop giving them your blood. Pete, it's an absolute pleasure talking to you, my friends. God bless you, everybody who's listening. Pete, stay right there. Pass the break. Stay right there. Ladies and gentlemen, God bless you. Have a great weekend. We'll see you there. Happy, healthy, successful, and free as God intends you to be. ThePowerHour.com. Righteous son, he is Yahweh, the three in one, he is Yahweh.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life, probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease, it's just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-98.